All right, episode 60, Still Waters. And I'm sure I'll come up with a title after I yap for a bit, but in this one, it's the... I'll just do the book title. This will be the last one for the Dan McCollum book series we've been doing. If you didn't know the context of how I acquired these, I went to an event, they had a prophetic training, and then they were selling books at the Table Coffee downtown Nebraska. And what made me kind of intrigued was, well, wow, actually a booklet or books on the subject. I guess there's books on every subject, right? But to actually see it in person, you know, it's like, all right, well, there you go. And this guy must still be in business, because probably would have got sued by now, right? There's two ways to make a lot of money in America. Number one is lawsuit, and number two is IT. So, it's called The Good Fight, the Prophetic Processing Workbook. It's got a picture of a sword being unsheathed. Pretty metal, medieval. The Good Fight. Let's read the back. Within this workbook are multiple strategic tools for accelerating your prophetic destiny. As the Apostle Paul instructed his spiritual son, Timothy, this... I'm sorry, I'm laughing because I remember I said spiritual son. And I remember one... I'm going to talk about that. This workbook will walk you through how-tos of fighting the good fight by the prophecy spoken over you. You will look intently at God's words to you and emerge with a plan for... spanning the great divide between your prophetic potential and your current reality. Suitable for individuals or group participation, judging and sorting prophetic words, discovering and living from a heavenly identity, unlocking the language of promise, strategizing and aligning with conditions, discerning your times and season, identifying your sphere of influence, deciphering symbols, types, and metaphors. Interesting. In The Good Fight, Dan, a man I believe to be the most effective prophetic trainer of this generation, has laid out a clear roadmap for the true adventurers to possess the land of his or her prophetic promise. Senior leader at the Mission, Vallaville, California, David Crone. Well, in any event, let's open up the first page to The Victor Goes the Spoils. Looks like, from what I can tell, there are 16. It's a big old booklet. There are 16 chapters. I'll read them out. Judging Prophecies, Processing Identity, Warring with Identity, Processing Promises, Warring with Promises. Okay. Seems like he has a process and a warring between each one. So basically 8 chapters, but each chapter has its own, I guess, sub-chapter. Warn with Promises, Chapter 6, Processing Conditions. Let me start over. Chapter 1, Judging Prophecy. Chapter 2, Processing Identity. Chapter 3, Warn with Identity. Chapter 4, Processing Promise. Chapter 5, Warn with Promise. Chapter 6, Processing Conditions and Commands. Chapter 7, Warring with those things. Chapter 8, Processing Time and Season. Chapter 9, Warring with those things. Chapter 10, Processing Spheres of Influence. Chapter 11, Warring with Sphere of Influence. Chapter 12, Processing Symbols, Types, and Metaphors. Chapter 13, Warring with those things. Chapter 14, Processing Major and Minor Themes. Chapter 15, Warring with those things. Chapter 16, The Good Fight. You know, for the sake of me, because I use the red pen, I want to read chapters 10 and 11. And then we're going to do chapter 16. So let's find out, eh? So chapter 10 is page 101. Let's see here. Lol. Alrighty. Chapter 10. I should probably just get the mic pinned to my chest because this book looks so big I gotta move my setup. Your gifts work everywhere on everyone, but it works best somewhere on someone. There you go. Let's see here. Every gift and every assignment has a specific sphere of influence where it works most effectively. Your gifts works everywhere on everyone, but it works best somewhere on someone. The same applies to your prophetic promise. Your prophetic promises usually have a specific assignment to a place or people group. People are often under the mistaken idea that God has given us all the power and authority everywhere. God gives you all power and authority in the areas he has assigned you. You don't have all power and authority when you visit my house. That was funny. You don't have all power and authority to drive any way you want on the highway. However, God has given you all power and authority within an assigned sphere of influence. Not bad. Before I continue reading, let me go to the back where I was making that joke. So, one thing I want to point out, you will notice, if you're like me, you probably listen to a lot of sermons. If you kind of recall my backstory of how do I recite verses and all that stuff. During COVID, for 2 years straight, I would listen to 3 sermons a day and from different pastors and preachers and teachers, sages of the ages, and they're all gone, but their sermons live on. They've been recorded through their ministries. And one thing I noticed is I would say a phrase they would say or a truth, a principle to people. And one of them was, for example, the as the Apostle Paul instructed his spiritual son, Timothy. If you read Paul's letters, he literally refers to me as Timothy, my son or spiritual son. And this, unfortunately, I've noticed in the church or in some settings or Bible studies, we have created a hardened heart. What I mean by that is this. You'll take a phrase that's clearly in the Bible, right? If you read it, you'll see it's in there. You can see people like this guy or other people who use the same phrase. Like, so they didn't just make it up. They didn't just pull this trick out of the hat. All right, this is a common phrase and it's pretty innocent and it makes sense. And yet, and I don't want to say maybe this is a result of being insecure. I want to say this is a result of trauma. Here's what I mean. So you say, oh yeah, Paul's spiritual son Timothy, and someone might correct you. Well, we don't really know if it was a son. Even though it literally says it, and it's been coined like 3 times from 3 different like pastoral leaders. And so now you're confused. You're like, well, that's kind of weird. I'm not sure why people are doing that. Here's my point. What's happening here is we are living in a type of era or world where if someone is not cognizant of something, they believe is either untrue, unfounded, or not real. This is dangerous, especially when that person is a leader. You're probably wondering why I'm going on this tangent. Well, because I read it in the back of this book and I want to really iterate on that. I just feel that needs to be said. This is why the number one trait for leadership is 2 things, and these 2 things eliminate ego. Number one is duplication. Does the person have someone behind them they're raising up? Or do they have the mindset of raising people up, right? Leadership should always be a job of getting yourself out of the job. If you're not doing that, you are under leadership someone who's insecure, doesn't have any self-control, and quite frankly, has an ego trip. It's a very dangerous spot. And if you're worked at any job and you've been under people like that, it's not a good place to be. It's a different vibe. It's toxic. One person's there to be served, and another wants to serve the people. Not people pleasing, but like whatever it takes to, you know, get the train rolling, right? Two different mindsets. Here's why I bring all this up. When you are under the authority, and that's what you're doing when you go to different churches and Bible studies and et cetera, whatever it is, jobs, and you notice the person in leadership is insecure in that regard. They haven't heard it, therefore it doesn't exist. And one of the second qualities you need is this one. Here's the second most important quality. I would say this is the most important quality. It gets rid of ego all the time. You need to have a learning spirit. It's, if you don't have that spirit, I like how Master Yi says it from League of Legends. A true master is the eternal student. If you are not always learning, mastering your craft, learning something new, I'm not saying let's glorify education. What I'm trying to suggest here is, what does this fundamentally do to your brain? At a fundamental level, your ego gets shattered because you have to recognize you don't know everything. One of the best things I heard from my pastor, I asked him, you know, how do you encourage people? Because in one hand, you want to tell them, hey, I went to this Bible college, I went to seminary, I did this and I did that and the other, so you can trust that I'm not a moron when I talk to you, right? We even have this thing called imposter syndrome. And he says, well, how do I encourage people? You know, because a lot of times you hear the opposite, right? Oh, well, I never went to college, I never did this and that, therefore, you know, I'm not qualified. And he said something that was really profound. I'm still learning. You never stop learning. And I think that's a great mindset. When you have that mindset, you don't get rusty, you don't get egotistical, you don't never have the I've arrived mentality. Anytime you have that mentality, you will miss stuff and things get crucial. I say all this to make this point. Whether you're listening on this podcast or another and you're learning and growing, I want to warn you the danger of being under people that are not doing the same things as you are. They're not, I'm not saying they have to be you. I'm saying they're not doing the work and it'll show. It'll show in basic conversation. And with that, that's my encouragement and warning to you as you keep growing and having deeper understandings and revelation. I want you to know that you will get into situations where people have never heard of it. And so what's the correct action? What's the practical step? Let it go. You got to frozen that. You got to recognize you're still right, but being right and doing what's right are two different things. So one of the things you have to do is realize, is the juice worth the squeeze? Is it worth correcting this person on the spot? Probably not. Just agree and move on. You know, that person's a fool, and eventually they're going to get in a jam for it. It's really hard to be a fool for long periods of time. Now, if they want to be corrected, sure, but what I've come to my experience being on this rock for 29 years, I've noticed from age 18 to 28, 29, for like 10 plus years of experience, I've noticed that very rarely, outside of myself, I have yet to meet human beings that ever say, I could be wrong, or I have questions, or what do you think about this? It's very rare. I could probably count it one hand, but it's a very rare quality because the human mind, the ego, is just too, the brain is not designed to find fault in itself, only in everything else but itself. Then you're probably thinking about insecure stuff. But anywho, it's called a rant. I'll get back to the book now, but I just want to kind of clarify that. I read that back of the book. I was like, that reminds me of that situation. And yep, as you're learning and as you're growing, if people are not learning and growing, you will, that is the direct conflict of someone who doesn't learn and grow. And there you go. Also, I do think it's interesting that in every field of study, lawyers and doctors and even pastors, they always keep learning. So leaders are readers. Not all readers are leaders, But every leader is a reader. They're always learning and growing and having a deeper comprehension, and it gets rid of that ego mindset. And then that way you always know what's going on. Anywho, that's called a rant. Let's get back to it. You don't have all the powers and authorities to drive wherever you want. However, God has given you all power and authority within a assigned sphere of influence. Finding your sphere of influence is like discovering a sweet spot of service where you are uniquely equipped and gifted to operate. Your sphere of influence is where you possess the most favor, authority, and influence. The more you function within your sphere of influence, the more enjoyable life can be. Mm-hmm. This is because you are especially equipped with grace, gifts, and the powers to be effective in that place. In the King James Version, sphere of influence is called your measure of the rule. Okay. But we will not boast of things without measure, but according to the measure of the rule which God has distributed. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. There are three different sphere. Let me see here. There are three. Okay. There are three different spheres or measures or rules I like to focus on: demographic, geographic. Oh my goodness! And social graphic. Geographic sphere is a certain type of person. Demographic is a certain type of person. Geographic is a specific place, and sociographic spirit is an interest group. Okay. Let's look at the biblical basis for spheres of influence and the types of spheres in a little more detail so that you can locate these treasures within your prophetic words. Demographic spirit. Paul, the apostle, said that he wasn't an apostle to everyone but to a specific group of people. Even though I may not be an apostle to others, surely I am to you. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 2. In the book of Romans, Paul declares, I am talking to you Gentiles, inasmuch as I am apostle to the Gentiles. Romans 11, verse 13. Yep. I think this speaks for itself. Obviously, you're not supposed to do everything. You need to focus in your wheelhouse. Which reminds me, from a more practical perspective, I do the jail ministry. And I preach there. I like that because I notice two things. When I'm doing Bible studies, people have a tendencies of, I don't want to say making excuses, but they definitely like to misconstrue the Bible. But in jail, I notice two things. I notice that, well, people are hungry. They call it fertile ground. But I think the main thing is that when people who hear it, there's like a 90% chance it won't return. At least that's the statistics show. And for me, it proves that the Bible is quite effective. Now, why did I bring it up with this demographic sphere, or why did I like talking to those people? Because I realized that my main value is effectiveness or the truth. If the truth is really that effective, it should work in all vectors. But if it's not, it indicates to me that's not the real problem, right? The problem is not, does the Bible work in Bible studies? The problem is the content of the individual in question. That's the factor. Right? You do it in jail, it's like, look, you got to get out of your cell and you have to make a deliberate decision to enter. But you doing a Bible study, well, you don't actually have to do the Bible, right? You're fine. You got a job, you got a car, you got money. By all rights, you don't really need the Bible. Now, we still need it, but, like, you know, the circumstances don't really convince us to. You know, it's not like you're getting your arm twisted. You're in jail. I got news for you. Now you're about to either go to prison or you got to go back out and not screw up again, right? So the need is greater. I like it when people, I like the need. There's a need for it. When people don't need it, what are we doing? If you're a doctor and you really want to be a doctor, I got news for you. You don't want to be in a town with a bunch of healthy people. You want to go where the people are sick. That would be the natural proclivity. But I digress. Paul was welcome to speak to anyone and everyone about Jesus and often did. We see examples of him speaking to Jewish people in the scriptures, but here he confesses that his assignments were influences to the Gentile people. In his second letter to the Corinthian church, Paul said that he would confine his boasting to the field of service God had assigned to him. We can see that Paul understood his authority and assignment within a specific demographic sphere. Jesus had a specific sphere of influence that he was sensitive to. Remember when the Canaanite woman came and asked Jesus for healing for a demon-possessed daughter? Jesus responded, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel." Matthew chapter 15, verse 24. That sounds harsh, doesn't it? Yeah. Why would Jesus deny this woman based upon her race? Remember that Jesus came to earth as a person under authority. He was careful to confine most of his ministry to the demographic of the lost sheep of Israel. Still, Jesus had freedom to act outside of his assignment. Because of the woman's faith and desperation, Jesus helped her and her child was totally set free. But the fact is that Jesus was careful to stay within the demographic sphere that God had assigned him to. Demographic sphere could be with an age group. You might find that you are specially gifted for children, senior citizens, youth, married people, or people from a specific nation or ethnic group. Now, I want to pause right here. I appreciate the fact that I notice that we have a tendency of using people of a demographic with people of a demographic. So what's the fundamental issue with that? Well, it means that you got a revolving door leadership, which isn't bad. It's just, it's really hard, right? So let's say, for example, youth. Oh, we need youth to be leaders. Well, how do you make youth leaders? Well, yeah, I guess you're going to have to hand-pick them, champ, and maybe you get lucky, right? Maybe the odds and the numbers are in your favor, but again, it's a difficult conundrum because it's almost like the age between 20 to up, I would say 30 and up, no one cares, right? There's no really demographical construct there. But when it comes to youth, that's where the game gets a little bit more. It becomes like a game of Kids Next Door. Remember that TV show from Cartoon Network? And it's like you get decommissioned. 13 to 14, you get decommissioned. And I'm like, yeah, look at that, man. You fuel the very industry of your enemies. It's kind of funny. But jokes aside, you know, it's an issue because the clock is against you, which means you always got to have people through the meat grinder, and it's eventually you might go through some hiccups. There may be seasons where you have more meat, seasons you have less. What I like about this right here, it's saying that people have a unique gift with certain demographics, regardless of their demographic. So something to factor in, to think about, that you don't have to match the demographic. Now, I'm sure if you happen to have qualities that they like, sure, but that's just dumb because obviously things can change, especially your age, and you'll have to figure something out. There has to be something greater that justifies the position outside of the demographic of the people you're talking to and your own. It's just not convenient enough or conducive for long periods of time, if it's age especially. This sphere of influence manifests as a grace and enjoyment of interaction with a sector of people. Not everyone enjoys hanging out with a bunch of little children. Now, ain't that the truth? But some people love it. I know a young lady who was fascinated by the stories of senior citizens. She can listen for hours on end and genuinely enjoy their firsthand historical accounts. That's not just a personal thing. It's a sphere of influence that she is uniquely gifted and graced for. You'll notice that your purpose is very correlated to what you're already doing or what you already enjoy doing. I used this analogy before, but I'll use it again. There's two things that Michael Jordan, they asked him, I believe it was Michael Jordan, what does it take to be the greatest of all time? And he said, first you gotta love the game, and then you gotta be better than anyone else at it. So the first fundamental thing is passion. What are you passionate about? Unfortunately, you can't fabricate this. You can't will it. You can't even sign a check for it. You either got it or you don't. And the good news is, if you reflect, I would say if you're praying and instill your mind and you request for a strategy from on high, I would advise you reflect on what were the moments in life where you felt most, I don't want to say alive, but most at, I don't even want to say at peace. You were just in that flow state. I hate that word. The flow state. The state where you're, you know, time just passed by. You didn't care. You might even be able to get this from video games. Well, Andre, are you saying I should play video games? No, I'm saying that what is it about the games? You ain't playing Monopoly, brother. What is the thing that you're spending your time on and why? There's something about it that it attracts you. So, I mean, obviously I'm doing this podcast, right? But, you know what got me was I just heard sermons online. I'm like, this is good stuff. This helps me out. I want to do it too. So I guess professional yapper, right? One thing I always hated was I hated the exact opposite. Usually you can discern what you're supposed to do by reflecting on the opposite thing that like grinds your gears. The thing that always irritated me was the opposite. People that would either discourage or were difficult to work with. I guess we could say that that's, I think everyone's mostly reaction would be, yeah, Andre, obviously. But I mean, like, I'm referring to, I'm not sure I would say I'm a control freak, but you're dealing with people where your success is, I won't say it's contingent on their cooperation, but it's definitely would be more convenient. And when people don't cooperate, man, it's annoying. It kind of reminds me of like playing Fallout 3. I brought this up because I just like to put some practicality to what we're reading. So, you know, this guy is citing like she was uniquely gifted and graced for talking to like elderly people. So yeah, what's the thing that you enjoy? What's the thing you don't enjoy? And then just reverse, as they say, reverse engineer it, and you probably have a good iota of what you're supposed to do. Now you may be doing what you're doing and you don't like it, and that's fine. I mean, that's called maturity. We all have to go through that. I wouldn't be discouraged. I think one of the most discouraging, kind of bizarre things I'm noticing is people, they want, I don't even know how to explain this, because it's so bizarre. People want what's best for you, and yet at the same time, they don't really know you or your full substratum of your circumstance. Here's what I mean. I notice that human beings have a tendency to, what's the word, project their own selves onto you. There's a phrase, it's a meme. It's with Woody and Buzz Lightyear. And Buzz Lightyear looks out, puts his arm on Woody's shoulder and says, people don't care about what you say. They just want to hear their opinion come out of your mouth. What that means is most people, or what it literally just says, people in general, other than being proved wrong and having conversation with you, they want to see their ideologies and truths reflected upon everyone else. It's a little immature. And here's what I mean. Let me give you another example of that. When you're talking with people, you're going to notice that they're what are their intentions, I would say. Now, when I talk to somebody, I'm talking with the intent of learning, asking questions that have a different perspective and having a deeper understanding, and also a principle, a truth that we can extrapolate and put into our own lives. What people are trying to do generally, and unfortunately at a subconscious level, they're trying to project their values onto you or affirm their values. What I mean by affirm, they want to have the comfort of knowing that they're right. It's very subtle, I might add. Very subtle. Why am I telling you all this? I want you to be careful when you ask these questions, because ultimately the answers you seek are within you. I heard that phrase and I hated it because I didn't understand it, but I finally realize after years, I realize a deep truth that the answers you seek are within you, because the answers that people give you are the answers they themselves are content with, but they're not your answers. Now, I know you're thinking, well, Andre, then why the hell do we talk to people? Well, you can get their answer, but it's their answer. Probably glean off of the fact how they got the answer or why that's the answer or what's the deeper principle. But it may not be your answer. It's just like, 5 + 2 = 7. But your problem may be 4 + 3. Well, the answer is 7, but that doesn't mean 5 + 2 and 4 + 3. You know, it's a different problem. Same conclusion, but different problem, different process that you may have to conclude to. The math, you need to understand the principle, right? 4 + 3 = 7. 6 + 2 = not 7, but the principle, the math. Hopefully that made sense. If not, dislike the video, right? All right. Tangent. There are also distinctions within certain cultures that you can have special graces or lack of grace for. Tribal cultures usually move at a much slower pace with emphasis on story and relationship. To someone without a tribal grace or assignment, he's going to keep going with these analogies. Geographic sphere. We also find people with promise and assignment in certain geographical spheres. Abraham was sent to a specific and promised designation of land that had become known as the Promised Land. The same was true for the children of Israel. Their prophetic promise applied to a specific geographic region. God is good everywhere, but there was special prophetic promises made to this nation, and that would only come true within geographical boundaries of their promised land. A geographical sphere does not have to be limited to one place. Jeremiah was called to be a prophet to many nations. Before I formed you in the womb, before you were born, I sent you apart, anointed you as a prophet to all nations. Okay. Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5. While Jeremiah had a call to a very broad geographical sphere, the prophet Samuel was assigned to a very specific border, and all of Israel from Dan to Beersheba, I butchered that, recognized that Samuel was attested as a prophet of the Lord. 1 Samuel chapter 3, verse 20. When I travel, I look for countries where I seem to have an unusual grace, favor, and authority. I hate to say this, but this may also apply to churches. I hate to say that, but that seems to be the case. And I don't want to say favoritism. I don't think that's the right word. But notice the word he just says. I seem to have an unusual grace, favor, and authority. If you are in, I talked about this before in a previous talk, but I noticed when it comes to your spiritual gifts, talents, and abilities, the question is, are you in an environment that supports those abilities, skills, and traits? For example, let's say you have the gift of healing, right? So you lay hands on people and they get healed. Well, I got news for you, Copernicus. If you're at a church that doesn't believe in the gifts or couldn't care less about that, and maybe they just go on tirades about prayer because that's a safe topic, I might add, very safe. Just pray. Well, I think I should lay hands on people. Well, He didn't tell me that. Yeah, no, of course he didn't tell you that, Copernicus. Here's the point. If you want to learn how to use a firearm, you don't use it at Walmart. You use it at a firing range. If you want to learn how to go to the gym, you want to learn how to lift weights, go to the gym. There's certain environments that do certain things. So my question or reflection would be, what are your gifts, skills, and abilities, and what are the environments that you need to go that will sharpen that skill or encourage it? That's the key word. You have to recognize every church has its own little wheelhouse. Every job, every environment, every group, every clique, every club has their demographic and wheelhouse. You just have to figure out yours. Now, I think the biggest parameter for what place you go to, obviously, is distance, right? I mean, you're not going to probably drive 45 minutes to a church. I don't know. Maybe it's really good. I don't know. But most people don't drive 45 minutes, right? I think they have a statistic that shows that if your gym is on the way when you're driving home, you'll probably go to the gym, right? It's on the path. You're not going to go out of your way. It's already in transit location. But something that needs to be said. When I travel, I look for countries. There's a geographical spirit could be within the boundaries of your own home. You can have an assignment from God to serve your own household, create an atmosphere of love. And okay, geographical spirit will manifest as a love and honor for specific territories. It's like finding your home, your land, a space that makes you feel connected, secure, and significant. Love and honor attracts the prophetic. So it is not uncommon for these geographic spirits to be confirmed or defined within your prophetic promises. Okay. Sociographic sphere. There are also examples of assignments to a certain interest group within society. Sociographic sphere applies to an interest within society, not limited to certain peoples or places. Aspha, Judithin, and He-Man were prophetic trainers, especially called to serve musicians, singers, and temple servants. It didn't matter if you were young, old, or where they were from. The calling was to musicians, servants in the tabernacle of David. Daniel's prophetic destiny was expressed in serving world leaders under four different kingdoms. Daniel had a sociographic governance sphere of influence that could serve leaders of different ages and from four different countries. Joseph's prophetic gifts shone in making business people and government leaders prosperous. Wherever he went, and wherever he was assigned to, he created systems for his oversight to prosper. In these two little examples, we see Daniel had a government sphere of influence, and Joseph had a business sphere of influence. In effect, both businessmen and government. Remember that none of this means that your promise and gifts will work in places outside your sphere of influences, nor that they're effective. Some of these sociographic spheres could fall into categories of what have been called the seven mountains of society. Seven major areas that affect society are business, government, family, education, media, arts, and entertainment, and religion. I think I'm going to say that again. So we got business, government, family, education, media, arts, entertainment, and religion. So we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's 8. That's weird. Our business, government, family, education, media. Oh, arts and entertainment. There you go. I don't know why. They're one. Right, there you go. Arts and entertainment. I'll just say entertainment. That's probably better. Keep in mind, though, the sociographic spheres are certainly not limited to these seven broad categories. You might be called to serve street people, surfers, millionaires, singles, orphans, runaways, sport figures, celebrities. The list would be endless. The defining factor of sociographic spheres is that it's not limited to a place, age, gender, or racial boundaries, unless it's combined with a call into a specific geographic or demographic sphere. Sociographic sphere manifests as a love interest in a specific group within society. One of the ways that you can discover any field of service, measures, or rules or sphere of influence is by finding designation or assignments within your prophetic words. Let's start this exploration with a simple word I have provided for you. Let's focus on this one for just a tad bit, and we'll end the audio here. Business, government, family, education, media, entertainment, religion. Okay. What I just heard was business. Let's say that's like your work. That would be your job. Government would be politics. Family. Family is interesting. I wonder if that's... That feels like a... Seems like a non-profit kind of thing. Non-profit behavior. That sounds... Sorry, non-profit. Sounds like fatherless behavior, but like a good version. Education, that would be like schools. I know it sounds like I'm just changing the words, but it just seems a little bit more relatable this way. Media, that would be this, I don't know, Facebook, internet. The internet. Arts and entertainment, that would be... that's entertainment, obviously. The entertainment sector. And then there's religion, church. So, with that... The question would be, which of these seven mountains is the one that kind of, it really gets your attention? Some of these bleed into some others, but politics, I don't know nothing about politics. I probably should. I see the grand scheme of it, but like when it comes to like reciting people's names and policies and what they did 15 years ago, not my cup of tea. Not my cup of tea. Let's see here. Do that. Let's see. Do that as well. Just look at one of the audio things, but let's see. Job. So I kind of like this list because it kind of gives you an iota of what your wheelhouse is. You'll kind of notice from the list, you're probably cringing when you hear it, right? Like job, politics, non-profits, school, internet, entertainment, and church. Like, what are the areas that you feel the most compelled to take action in or comfortable in, etc.? And I think it's funny how we kind of tell people, I think this is a mistake, by the way, we tell people all the time, right? Like, you need to be on your A game in all areas. It's just not practical. But in any event, let's see, for me, job, I'm going philosophical on these. I'm trying to deny the temptation, but like job, I mean, I don't know. I mean, technically, who are you all the time? Politics, nonprofit. Or his family, school, like the education sector, not my vibe. Internet, oof, I guess I am in the internet, but entertainment, that's an interesting one. That's like the entertainment world. These are all different vectors. I would say the job, the nonprofit, internet, and church. That seems within the realm of reason. Politics and that requires a certain level of skill, and what's the word I want to call it? It's not even skill, it's more like a level of tolerance in those fields that you're going to need to be successful. You're going to need a lot of people skills and bending your moral code in entertainment and politics, and even schools, unfortunately, right? Because schools are government institutions, and so you have to go by a script with that. But I digress. So that was only like four pages. Now, processing spheres of influence, practice, and then he gets like a little workbook, and it's just for you to answer. Where should I focus? Like, so basically, what you read in the chapter, but then it just asks you, like, what does this mean to you? So. I think we'll read the chapter 16 next time. And that concludes our episode. Hopefully that wasn't too terrible experience. Hopefully you got something out of it. Maybe you want to buy the book. But yeah, that's episode 60. Someone asked me a question. I'll leave with this. You know, how do you keep doing it every week? How do you have the discipline or will? You know, it's kind of funny. I didn't want to do it, but then I reflected on Jesus on that cross and not my will, but thy will be done. And I was like, you know what? That's where it's at. That's where it's at right there. If you live your life from the position of your feelings and what is conducive for you, you're cooked. But if you live your life from a greater reason that anchors your behavior, or I would say, let me rephrase that, it doesn't even anchor your behavior, it destroys your excuse, then you'll do it. But with that, we are now good. I'll talk to you next time. Deuces. Have a blessed day.